Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how amazing swapping out your transfer case fluid is in Toyotas, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs. My name is Tyler, and joining me on episode 308 of the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast here once again in the studio on the Snail Trail Cuddle Couch is Mr. Jimmy Jett, all by his lonesome. How are you, man?
I know, it is lonely over here.
It is lonely. Ryan went back inside.
I know. That was sad.
You were trying to recruit him into the cuddle club there for a little bit.
I know. Sean and I could have a new friend.
Other than Chris?
Yeah. Chris is always welcome. He just doesn't always show up.
Oh, sounds like, never mind. I was going to say it sounds like wheeling trips, but I can, that's the same as me right now.
Right? Put insert foot into mouth. Right.
No, because I made it out on the Rubicon this weekend, this last weekend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What were you in?
I don't know yet.
I'm not sure if I made it out yet or not either.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I had somebody comment about that from our last episode because I said it was a great trip out on the Rubicon. Nothing bad happened, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, hey, wait a minute. You weren't out on the Rubicon this weekend. I was like, shh, no one needs to know that. Yeah.
Time travel.
Anyways, man, Monday episode. Welcome to Monday.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Feels good to be here.
It's always good to be here at the studio. I need to do more decorating in here.
It's looking better and better though.
I haven't touched it in like 2 or 3 weeks though.
So it's kind of funny. I've had two people here recently ask me to start shooting videos again.
What?
Yeah.
That's weird.
I know. And I said, we do have a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, but I don't get to see you guys. I'm like, do you really want to watch two dudes talking?
No.
And they were like, well, it'd be good to understand what you guys are talking about at some points. Actually, and bringing that up, even Hustle Nuts told me that in episode, 302, 304, when we had Gear Wrench Corey in the studio, I guess we talked a lot about the EVA foam trays, and we didn't describe them very well.
Oh,
because we were looking at them and talking about them, but we weren't describing what we were looking at.
Gotcha.
And so I think maybe that was the kicker, that they would have been nice to have video to show what we were talking about.
Gotcha.
But that's not our giveaway this week.
It is not our giveaway this week. What was our giveaway this week?
Our giveaway this week is the E-Spec torque wrench.
I just got chills up my back.
Yeah.
I'm back in my
roughly
neck.
Roughly, what, $1,300, $1,400 torque wrench for an individual out there? It will remember every time you tighten something. It'll log that away electronically.
Yep.
It has an immense amount of different features inside of it. It does the lights and vibrates and screams at you, and not only lights up on the screen, but has the what they call it, runway lights on the sides. So if you're not looking directly at it, you can see it on the sides when you get to the specific torque. I gotta say, man, I used my electronic torque wrench last week assembling the T cases, and it's nice just to like see a visual difference between green and red.
Yes, it is.
And not have to rely on a click.
Yeah.
You know, and not only that, but have, you know, the vibration and then the beeping and the audible sound all happen all at the same time. So the electronic version of the torque wrenches is miles ahead of the old school click versions.
Oh, 100%. I don't think I can go back to click ones.
I have a click one for my trail kit.
Okay.
But it's more of a breaker bar now.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. This week is the E-Spec torque wrench, half inch drive, removable head.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
That was another kind of feature about this torque wrench is that you can remove it. And it comes with a solid head and a flex head.
120 tooth.
120 tooth. Super nice, smooth.
But not only that is you could actually, if you want, you can go out and you can buy some like crow's feet or other adapters that fit on this torque wrench so that you can use it in multiple different ways instead of just sockets.
Yeah, it's really neat the way it was set up. The modularity of it comes with a couple extra battery packs. The batteries are all rechargeable. It comes with a recharging stand for the batteries.
It comes with the battery pack that you can put batteries into.
Yeah, it's a really, again, another really well thought out piece of equipment here from Gear Wrench. So I'm sure everybody now has the big question. How do they win it?
Yes.
How do I win it? How do I win it? Because I want one.
So you can win by going onto the Snail Trail 4x4 Instagram page. And there should be a photo of the eSpec torque wrench. And then all you need to do is make sure that you're following Snail Trail 4x4, following Gear Wrench Tools, and then make a comment down below tagging three friends.
Yep.
And that makes you entered.
Yep. And no tagging Donald Trump and Ariana Grande again.
Yeah. Well, this one you can tag whoever you want, kind of. Because, yeah. I mean, our next one's going to be tag a friend and then they win.
That's true, right?
Yeah. So if you tag on that one, like, we're never going to get a hold of Donald Trump or Ariana Grande to give them some tools. But this one, yeah, tag away. You can enter as many friends as you want. You can enter as many times as you want. You know, I think last year...
Everybody needs to tag Dak Shepard for us.
Yes, Dak Shepard and Richard Hammond.
And Richard Hammond.
Those are like our two... what do you want to call them?
What's it called? Bucket list meets?
Yeah, okay, that'll work. I was going to go with the... What's it called when you have a celebrity that you're allowed to have sex with?
Oh, top free three?
Yeah, that's another way that they say it. Okay. But there's another term for it. I forgot what it was called.
Hall pass?
Hall pass. Hall pass. Yeah,
I don't want to have sex with Dak Shepard.
Yeah, that doesn't work now that I say it. Those are our ideal interviewees.
Okay, if you say so. I'm kind of wondering.
You rather have Dax Shepard be your hall pass?
No, I'm wondering about you thinking of Richard Hammond as your hall pass now.
So tag away, ladies and gentlemen, tag away. Find the picture of the eSpec torque wrench on Snail Trail 4x4 and tag three friends, follow Gear Wrench, follow Snail Trail 4x4. And that gets you entered. A chance to win. We'll do a random name generator thing that we've done in the past. And we'll figure out who wins.
Cool. So is this, what's the time limit on this one?
1 week.
Sunday. Sunday night.
Yes.
You have until the end of the day Sunday, and we'll be pulling the winner on Monday. We'll announce it next Thursday.
Correct.
This Thursday.
Next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
This Thursday, we're announcing the winner for the Hex Keys.
Yeah. You sure about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little confusing.
I'm very confused.
But yeah, so this week on Thursday, we're going to announce the winner for the Hex Keys. And then while the eSpec giveaway is going on.
Cool. Awesome.
Just like last week, we had the winner for the screw extractors while the Hex Keys giveaway was going on.
This is beyond my skill set. I'm okay. Trusting you.
You trust me.
Okay.
I've led you nowhere but badware.
But badware. Nice. Oh, man. All right. So half inch eSpec torque wrench up for grabs. So make sure you guys go and do that. And then we have another giveaway next week. So make sure you're listening next Monday's episode.
Yes.
Let's see.
All while we have the giveaway for that's on the Snail Squad happening as well over on iRate 4x4. You can go and sign up over there, $10 tier, enter the giveaway, and we are giving away a 26 inch toolbox, upper and lower sections, and the five EVA foam trays that we talked about a little bit earlier. The one we didn't touch on was the ratcheting wrenches. You get a plethora of standard sized length ratcheting wrenches and a bunch of spaces to add stubbies.
Nice. So Snail Squad, to get entered for that one, Austin made an awesome change.
That's right. Yeah.
To the Irate 4x4, the Snail Squad forum under Snail Trail 4x4. So essentially, we have the Snail Trail 4x4 forum, and then there's another sub forum under that called the Snail Squad. In order to get access to the Snail Squad forum, which has some fun discussions going on, you got to get entered for the Snail Squad. And that's all right there underneath the first Snail Trail 4x4 forum on Irate 4x4. So if you're accessing it from a computer, as soon as you pull up the forum, the options are right there on the right-hand side of the screen. If you access it on a phone, a mobile device, it's going to be at the bottom of the page. So take a look at that nice user X that Austin added to the website to make it easier to find that. So
definitely.
Yeah.
Thanks, Austin.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Let's see. What else do we got going on? I had a question.
Okay.
You got in some prototype panels for snail armor.
I did.
What did you get in? Because I saw a picture with like five different panels stacked up.
Oh. I got the gladiator panel.
Okay.
Which has, I've got to move some holes like a 16th of an inch.
Okay.
For it to be perfect. I got in the first gen Forerunner panel.
Okay.
My laser cutter forgot to cut the second gens. Sorry, Tyler and Man. Sean. And then I got in a Raptor.
Oh.
And Ranger.
Okay.
And first prototypes of those.
Nice. Do you think the Raptor would fit the regular F-150 if we took the stripper pole off?
I don't know. We could try. I could bring it down one time.
Yeah.
Let's do it. We could do some general measuring and I can go back and see.
Compare.
The Raptor panel it's long. It's like, I forgot how, it's like 3 inches wider than the Tundra.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy. I thought I might be able to fit it in the same box, but nope.
Wow. Okay.
But they're the same height. They're both 20 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
But they, that's much wider.
Interesting.
Then, yeah, it was interesting.
I mean, I know that the one of the big selling points of the Raptor is that it's a wider vehicle. That's what the thinking is behind doing the Bronco Raptor, right?
Which you're gonna get?
I don't know yet. My dealer told me not to
because it puts you at the end of the list. Because
it'll put me at the end of the list again. But I'm still kind of like, if I'm waiting another 2 years, anyways, like.
Right.
Might as well. I don't know. I still don't have my Bronco, and I'm being sour about it. Fuckers.
Ferd.
God damn it, Ferd.
I've been looking at 1976 Ferds.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I might have to... No, I can't. The secretary's already sold on the Bronco. I was like, I may have to cancel my Bronco order and just go get a Tundra.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what comes out here over the next few years until I get my Bronco.
Yeah. So just by thinking about it right now while you're talking, I don't think the F-150 and the Raptor will fit just because it is so much wider.
Yeah.
So
I wasn't
but
sure.
I wonder how close it is to a Tundra.
Mm.
The bolt hole locations would be different, but overall length and width might be pretty close.
Yeah.
So that's going to be one of my problems in regards to snail armor here coming up. Like once if I have the six versions of panels roughly that are going to be coming out, I'm going to need more different variety of boxes. Right now I have two sizes of boxes for three panels.
Yeah.
And when I go if I add the six new products to the lineup, I'm pretty sure I'm going to need at least two more box sizes.
Yep.
If I want to keep it or figure out a way to make the boxes more universal.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Nah, we're facing a little bit of that right now at a Morphlight. Add more SKUs, make a wider inventory, and you got to find more shipping solutions.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the Tundra panels right now are too large. USPS won't even ship them.
They won't take them at all.
No. I had and maybe I shouldn't voice this on air, but I had a mistake on a Tundra panel and the guy wanted to exchange it for something. And the only shipping return that was available was USPS and it would have cost five times what I sent it there for.
Wow. So he couldn't ship it UPS or
I shipped it UPS.
Okay.
But on Shopify, they only have returns with USPS unless you have a US or unless you have accounts with other services.
Okay.
And I don't have any other, I don't have an account with UPS or FedEx or DHL or whatever.
Shoot me a text.
Okay. What should the text say?
Hi, Tyler.
Hey, Tyler.
Can UPS. I borrow your UPS account?
Yeah. So anyway, so that there's growing pains.
Yeah, for sure. Growing pains are, they're again, masochistic, right? They're frustrating, but I love them.
No, that's you. Mm-hmm. I want everything to be simple the time.
I'm weird. Simple all the time?
Yeah. I was just talking about to the mini assistant about that.
Okay.
Because she was upset about how swim practice, she's in swim lessons, and she was hitting the lower, we gave her the swim lessons are typically 2 weeks on the ones that we entered her in, but we did an accelerated 1 week lesson and it was easy. And then, so we moved her up to the next level where now they're learning backstroke and she's like, it's really tough. I don't like it. I don't want to do it anymore. And I'm like, what?
What? That makes no sense.
Yeah. She's like, I liked it. I want to move down. I liked that one. And so I was having the discussion about how learning things can be difficult, but it's good to learn things.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So I was sort of making fun of myself by saying, I want to keep do it all the easy way.
Nice. Got it. Good job, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Oh man. All right. So let's get on over to today's campfire discussion, shall we?
Sounds good.
Cool.
I'm ready.
Yeah, so it's going to be, I think, a good one. I have a rant to start it off with, so we'll get in there. And yeah, that's all I got, man. So grab your favorite drinks. Grab your favorite snacks. I like Airheads, so just let everybody really? Know. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really neat if you take on an Airhead and shake it a lot, like a Polaroid picture, until the Airhead is all the way down in like this little bunch in the bottom of the package.
Okay.
And then you can eat it like
gum,
a nugget, almost like gum.
Yeah.
It's so much better than eating it like taffy in this long strip. Just put that out there. Random fact for the day. Random opinion from
Tyler. And then what? You throw it in a Zima?
In a Zima? What's a Zima?
Never mind.
Okay. All right. Grab your favorite snacks out there, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll be right on back with today's campfire discussion. Welcome back, ladies and gentle ladies, to today's campfire discussion. So we're talking a little bit off air about drinks.
Okay.
My favorite, I think, energy drink is Balls. And I can't ever find it anywhere. I haven't found a consistent place to get it at. Do you know what that is? You're looking at me weird.
It's a blue bottle.
It's a blue bottle. It's a blue and bumpy bottle.
Yeah. The bottle has like balls on it.
Yeah.
On the side.
And it's spelled BALS. Mm-hmm. And I can't find it anywhere. I didn't know it
was an energy drink.
Yeah.
I thought it was alcoholic.
Nope. It's a high guarana, caffeine and guarana drink. Mm. So
I like Coke and coffees.
The vanilla ones? The vanilla Coke and coffee? The
caramel ones are good too.
I don't think I had the caramel ones.
And when you add whiskey to it.
Put some Anorak in a caramel Coke and coffee.
Maybe.
Like an old caramel Coke and coffee old fashioned.
Well, whiskey Cokes are good.
Yeah.
And coffee, Irish coffee and whiskey are good. Mm-hmm. So a coffee, Coke and whiskey.
Yeah. With
coffee, Coke and whiskey would be good.
It'd be an Irish whiskey and Coke.
Coke. Yeah.
Irish Coke whiskey.
Yeah. Irish coffee whiskey.
Oh man. Anyways, we digress. So
balls.
And I was just, I don't know why I just brought that up, because it was a fun fact. Another fact, one of my favorite snack foods and one of my favorite
drinks. We see those in Moab like 2 years ago? When did you buy some?
I don't remember when I bought those, but like it was at an obscure store that I don't remember. Like it's not one I
know. It was a random store, and you walk in and you came out with one bottle and you're like, they've got balls. And you're like, and we're like, okay. And then you're like, put it down. And you're like, I'm going to go back and buy the rest. And then he went back into the store and bought like five more or something like that.
Yes, that sounds like something I would do.
Like you're so stoked, but you didn't realize it that you're like, I don't ever get these. And I bought one. That was stupid of me. Why don't I buy more?
I don't remember where that was, but I still haven't found them anywhere in Sacramento. So
yeah, my Coke and coffees are hard to find. Mm-hmm. I only find them at like gas stations.
Mm. And I found them at Safeway one time, but I haven't looked again since that one time.
Yeah, they're at the Bel Air near the assistant's house, but they're not at the Rayleigh's near my house or the shop, my shop.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funky. Yeah. Like in Bel Air and Rayleigh's, I think are the same company.
The same company, yeah.
You know, so it's
Knob Hill.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever.
Anyways, Vons and Safeway.
Yeah. We brought that up because I wanted to have my favorite drink for this campfire discussion, and we don't have any. Mm. And I can't find them.
We could open some Old Elk.
I'll think about it.
Okay.
I do have a rant, though. I wanted to start this off with a rant.
Oh, I thought that was the rant.
No, not quite.
It'll get my balls.
It'll get my balls. No, my rant is that a lot of people call summer season wheeling season.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
It's not the wheeling season.
When is?
Snow. Winter. That's snow season.
Snowmobiling season.
No, no, no. That's snow wheeling. That's wheeling season is then the snow. No.
You just said it.
No.
That's snow wheeling season.
It's still a wheeling season. You can't just say wheeling season is starting. Wheeling season is year round.
No.
Yes. If you're not wheeling year round.
There's a snow wheeling season. There's a maintenance season. There's a wheeling season. There's a maintenance season.
I disagree. Wheeling season is year round, 100%. And that's my rant.
So what are you doing right now with your rig?
I'm trying to wheel it.
You're in maintenance mode.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to wheel it mode and I keep breaking stuff.
Yeah, because you missed that maintenance season.
We don't need to talk about what I do here, Jimmy.
Yeah. Yeah, don't listen to Tyler or do listen to Tyler and realize learn that he doesn't
what I do.
Yeah, do his maintenance season.
I try and maintenance as I go, which doesn't always work.
No. And I think most people see winter as a long-term project session.
I agree. I think a lot of people do.
Which is the opposite of you.
Exactly.
You would rather have your rig during winter and... Yeah. During summer, you'd rather rip it apart and build it.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I love snow wheeling more than I like rock crawling, but all the people that I like hanging out with prefer rock crawling over snow wheeling. And so it's kind of like I either...
What does that say about the people you like hanging out with?
That they're fucking weird.
Maybe you're the weird one.
No. That's not how statistics works.
Yeah. The mass majority of the people are odd, while the solo person is normal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. No. I mean, it's like go wheeling during the winter by myself or go wheeling during the summer with everybody else and take my rig down during the winter to do maintenance and stuff. And it's, it really makes me sad when I can't go snow wheeling. So makes me sad that I miss out on trips during the summertime because I break stuff and stuff doesn't stay together because I don't maintain it.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So you're missing that maintenance season.
I am because there is no maintenance season.
What about when snow melts and trails are muddy?
That's a good time to do it. But then we go to Moab during that time.
True.
So it's like, I got to get the rig ready for Moab. And
break leaf springs.
And then I blow up everything at Moab. Oh, man.
Man, how lucky are we that your transmission didn't go out on that trip after we had fixed it?
Holy fuck. Are you kidding me? We would have had to have swapped over the leaf springs and you would have been pulling me out.
Probably.
Yeah, the whole way.
Or we just had Lee pull you out or something. Just,
yeah, that's true. We could have had Lee do it. He's got a big old fat heavy rig. Mm-hmm. Or we could have had, I forget what his name is, the guy in the FJ Cruiser. he could have pulled me out too. He's got a nice big heavy rig. No.
Big,
I know it wasn't
big Carl.
No.
I don't know.
Anyways. So we're here today to talk about maintenance.
Yes. It's maintenance season.
It's maintenance season. And why did we decide to talk about this, Jimmy?
Because it's right around the corner from wheeling season.
No, it's right around the corner from summer. Summer.
Season.
Summer. Just summer. There's no seasons.
Oh.
Not in California right now. There's no seasons.
Sure there is. There's winter and there's summer.
There's winter and there's summer, and they happen in the same week each week. Yeah. Right now.
You go by day.
Yeah, it's winter, it's seasonal days.
It's no longer seasons. It's day. This is winter day, and tomorrow's a summer day.
No. So we got word from my mechanic and Kermit, and what's going on with Kermit, kind of thing. Apparently my clutch, the springs in my clutch, kind of exploded, and they went all everywhere. And that's what is rubbing on the flywheel and catching and causing my clutch to keep engaging, right? So they're fixing and working on that. But while doing that, they drained the oil out of my transmission, and it was really, really bad.
Yeah.
Like really bad. And
what did they say about it?
They said it looked like chocolate milk.
Ooh.
Yeah, like really bad. Transmission oil should not look like that.
No.
Ever. So I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know, now that I think about it, I don't think I've replaced the transmission oil, done maintenance on my transmission oil, since I had the rig built, or the 3-4 swap done with Ori.
Right.
Which was
2 years ago.
2 years ago, a year and a half to 2 years, right around there. So like over a 2 year period of, you know, just going out and off-roading, I've probably driven the rig in that 2 years, 5,000 miles, 4,000 miles, maybe.
I was going to guess 10.
You think that much?
2 years? Yeah, I drove Bob. Well, yeah, I don't know. I drove Bobcat 700 miles last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, like in 2 years.
But I tow Bobcat to the trails.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And I don't drive him nearly as much as you drive Kermit.
Yeah. Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I'd be 5,000. 5,000. Let's just say 7,000 for sake of argument.
Sure.
Should a transmission oil look that bad in 7,000 miles?
Nope.
No, it should not. And so this is the problem, though, and why we're doing this topic is we need to be doing our maintenance.
Yes.
And complete maintenance. Then this is why. So that you know what's going on with your rig. We put our vehicles under a lot of different stresses out there.
Oh, absolutely.
In very remote locations a lot of times. And a lot of times on trips with other people where the goal is to have a good time. We don't want to be sitting there having to tow vehicles out of trails. I mean, it happens, and we're happy to do it for our buddies. It becomes some fun for some people.
Right.
But it's not the goal of the trip, right? You get the
cowbell or something.
Yeah, you get the cowbell, you get the giant nut, whatever it is that your group of buddies does, the boner award. There's a lot of different reasons to do maintenance. And the biggest one, in my opinion, is to just so that you know what's going on with your vehicle. By doing simple, basic, complete maintenance, you can get a very thorough picture of what's going on with a lot of different components on your vehicle.
Absolutely.
So,
not to mention that after you do the maintenance, you have a little bit more confidence in your vehicle.
Yeah.
Since it's things have been refreshed or touched and you inspected things that are going on in with your vehicle. And then when you take it out, you know that those things are done.
Yeah, exactly. So what are some maintenance stuff that people might want to look into transitioning from winter wheeling season to summer?
Yeah, I would definitely say that the first and probably most important thing to do is replace the headlight fluid.
The headlight and blinkers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, headlight blinker fluid is the first thing for sure.
Change it out. You don't need the coolant in there anymore. You can just add regular water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't need antifreeze in there because it's not winter anymore?
Yeah.
Okay, what about changing the air in your tires to summer air? What do you,
I do that every time I wheel.
Right. No, I want to go through some of the basic maintenance items, because there's probably people out there that listen to our show that don't necessarily know how to work on a rig, know where to start working on a rig. So I think basic maintenance is one of those things that anybody can do. You don't really need special tools to do it. You don't need a lot of special know-how to do it. But it can give you a big kind of start opening your doors to other things you can fix on your vehicles. So let's start with basic maintenance stuff. And what are some things we can go through?
Yeah. I would start at least, I mean, I do Bobcat's fluids once a year for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
The differentials, the transmission, the T cases, the engine oil, I think that's pretty much the ones that I try to, I mean,
that
maybe
you
not
place kind of thing, or
I do. Yeah. I change those probably once a year.
Okay.
Front, both differentials, front and rear. I don't do the coolant. I just look at it to see mm-hmm. how it is, if it's full. But I do look at my coolant. I mean, mm-hmm. I do open it up and see if it's...
You check the level?
Yeah, check the level of the coolant
okay.
and make sure that it's above the fins or, mm-hmm. you know, near the top of the radiator,
mm-hmm.
Just to give an idea. But I do know that I'm pretty sure coolant does go bad.
Huh.
I think that there is a sort of a
I want to say there is a limit with a lot of the additives being put in coolant nowadays. It's supposed to be pretty high mileage, like 100,000 miles, something like that.
That
but
makes
like,
sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with like my 22RE, you know, I don't really, I mean, there's belts to look at, but there's not like a serpentine belt, which is an important one mm-hmm. that my engine has a chain.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but if you have a serpentine belt, I would definitely take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And see if it's cracked or cracking or has any gouges or gashes on it, and
yeah, because if that goes down, you're down, you're down. Out.
Absolutely.
With a 22RE, if you lose a power steering belt, it's not the end of the world. You could still your engine will still operate and work.
It sucks.
It sucks, but you can still
especially
work.
If you have hydro assist.
Yeah.
Now not only driving manual steer, but you're having to force the hydraulic ram.
Uh huh.
Yeah. It sucked.
Yeah.
Don't ask me how I know.
I did it coming down Hell's Gate backwards 2 years ago. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. True. I remember. Yep. Let's see. So then, I mean, that's sort of the basics, I think, is just some basic fluids. Mm-hmm. Change your air filter, change your in-cab air filter.
Mm-hmm.
That's one that probably gets skipped very often.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're ever on a dusty trail ride and then you turn your vents to high and dust comes out,
poof,
and then you're smelling dust for like the next mile,
yeah,
that's because your in-cab air filter is dirty as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So changing that one out is important to do, mm-hmm. especially if you're a closed rig.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you're an open rig, it probably doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like easy high level stuff right now.
So let's talk about differentials first.
Okay.
In order to change the fluids in your differentials, what steps are you taking here?
Well,
and what are you looking for when you do change your fluid in your differentials?
Okay. You just need to know what differential fluid you need to put back in before you change it.
That's a good call. Yeah.
Don't
empty your fluids out and then be like, oh, I forgot which one you get, and then go drive it to the store.
Right. If you have a spare rig, that's not, you know, might not be as bad as a deal, but
yeah.
But yeah, find out if you need gear oil or a special type of gear oil or, you know, regular, you know, motor oil in there or ATF or power steering fluid or whatever. Mm-hmm. You check and see that, you know, I don't think you're going to add power steering fluid to your axle, but, you know, you never know. So
a lot of limited slip differentials need a specific formula,
mm-hmm. a specific weight
of their gear oil, mainly because it's essentially a centrifugal clutch pack, right? So those clutches need to be able to operate and move against each other correctly. Most other locker styles or open differentials, you can put pretty much whatever you want in there. I mean, within reason, but limited slips are the big one. Need to watch for. So
good call.
Yeah.
From there, I mean, I would definitely have the right size sockets or breaker bar, and you need an oil catch can.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, yeah, just, you know, you just break it loose, and I usually undo the filler first.
Mm, that's a good call.
Mm-hmm. And then I undo the lower drain plug, because then it can air gets sucked in as fast as the oil is going out.
Yeah.
So. It doesn't do that sloshing, glopping, glooping motion as bad.
Uh-huh.
And then once you want to, I really like to watch the very first like inch that flies out.
Mm-hmm.
And I look in, like I try to watch it fall into the pan. Mm-hmm. And then I look at it as fast as I can because more is coming out. You're just looking to see if it's metallic, if it has glitter in it.
Yeah.
Also, if you have a drain plug, and if you don't, I would highly suggest upgrading to the drain plug that has the magnet on it.
Yep.
And look at that and see how much metal metallic stuff's on there. There's always pretty much going to be some sort of level of metal and metallic on there.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's like mounding up, you know, it's not just this little flat, you know, amount of grit on top, but uh-huh. it has this mound, then, you know, something's kind of is happening inside of there that things aren't completely aligned correctly.
Yeah, 100%. And that's one of the things I wanted to get to is, you know, by doing this maintenance on your differentials, what can you tell about your differentials?
Yeah.
And that's the big one, right? Is you're looking for metal in your gear oil. And if there's a lot of metal in there, another good, interesting way to look at it, I've seen people take magnets and put it up to the stream of oil coming out of the differential, and you can move the stream around using the magnet.
Oh, interesting.
And that's another way you can tell there's a lot of metal in the oil if you're not seeing glitter necessarily.
Stick the magnet in the oil that's coming out and just see what's
see what gathers up on it. Yeah. That's another way. So, yeah, that's a good one. And then once it's drained out and you kind of know what's going on to fill it back up, you just release the fill plug, put the drain plug back in, and just keep dumping oil into your differential until it starts coming back out the fill plug, really.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Some differentials are different setups.
Yeah.
Some don't have a drain plug. Some, true. You know, I think everybody has a fill plug.
Somewhere.
But some you don't fill up till fluid comes out of the drain plug.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, I even think the Toyota ones, you're supposed to be like an eighth of an inch below the drain plug.
The fill plug?
Yeah. The fill plug. Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, you're not supposed to be completely full with it flowing out, even though that's pretty much what everybody does.
Yeah.
But there are little nuances to each axle.
Yeah.
And same goes for your rear axle, in that, you know, front or rear, kind of same scenario. I don't change my front axle as often as I change my rear axle, because my rear axle I drive around on. And for Toyotas, the front, none of the interior parts of the axle move if you have hubs that you can unlock, and our T cases don't spin when they're in two wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a less movement, less use on the front axle. So I really don't.
A lot less.
Yeah, I don't change that one nearly as often. Mm-hmm. I'd still probably do it once a year. But I do change my rear axle probably a few times a year. And depending on water crossings and adventures that you kind of go on, you know,
especially from the snow wheeling.
Exactly. From snow wheeling season to the wheeling season, you know, you need
the rock crawling season.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably for sure change those out just because you don't know if you did go into puddles or go through watering holes or how much, you know, water got into those axles, you know, and even if you do have a really tall breather, you know, tube, it's still, there's still chances of water ingress through the hubs or one way or another. And you just got to pay attention to that.
Yeah. I feel like no matter what you do, no matter how many seals you have, if you're doing water crossings, then you should definitely be checking everything associated with your axle, from water crossings. Water just has ways of getting past stuff.
It really does. Yeah.
So, check those out. The big one for me with, coming through water crossings, coming out of snow season, is wheel bearings.
Yeah. And that's actually, I was going to go there next.
Nice.
I think a good trick to, understand about wheel bearings is, lifting one of the sides of your truck up and having the tire be free and then grabbing the top of your tire and the bottom of your tire and rocking it sort of towards the vehicle and away from the vehicle and seeing how loose that is.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's loose enough that you can feel like a clunking in your hands, then you know your wheel bearings are most likely bad. They could just be loose, but if they've been loose for a while, then they're probably bad.
Yes.
And that's just a quick and easy way to check. To get an idea if something's okay or bad, the best way to do it is just to dive in, open up your axle, open up the, you know, your knuckles or your hubs and get in there and look at the bearings.
Yeah, I agree. And, really for me, it comes down to, you know, on Toyota, semi-float axles, right? Toyota mini truck axle, the rears, IFS width axles, whatever you're looking at for Toyota stuff. I usually will make those wheel bearings. I'll get the sealed ones.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say most of the time they are sealed.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure if they didn't come in sealed ones, but but like on the fronts though, where you're sitting on a spindle on the front or full float stuff, pull those apart and re-grease your bearings. Take a look at, physically get eyes on the bearings, the roller bearings there, the cages, make sure it's all good, and repack it after the wheeling season.
Yeah. I'll just go on record here, and I mean, somebody please prove me wrong. But the, like, I have the Trail Gear long fields with the gun drilled, mm-hmm. and that has the Zerk fitting on the outside.
Yep.
My concern with those is that you can undo the hub real quick, and you can attach, you know, your grease gun to it, and then mm-hmm. you can fill it up with grease, and you consider it good,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're like, okay, I greased that part.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's fine. My thing is, like, you don't know what's going, first of all, you don't know what's, if it's good or not.
Mm-hmm.
You're hoping, I just added grease, everything should be great.
Yeah.
The second thing, besides, you know, not having an idea, but if you do that too much, then you just add too much grease.
Yeah.
And now you have pressure pushing against your seals.
Yeah.
And the grease and everything that's inside is going to blow your seals.
Yeah.
Because you added too much grease.
It could be.
In
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And you don't know if you've added too much grease.
Yeah.
Because it's not like it's going to come back at you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not supposed to fill that void with grease.
Yeah.
So, I think it's a great idea, and it's a good, like, quick prevention, but I do feel that you should not use that Zerk fitting on as the solution to solve your problems.
Yeah.
What's going on in your axle.
I agree. Especially for Burfield's RCVs, if you have a way to, I don't know if RCVs do that, if they're gun drilled, but like most aftermarket Burfields are all gun drilled nowadays. I just remove the Zerk fittings. Because I'm like, I don't want to rely on that at all.
No.
If I'm going to be concerned about my Burfields, I'm just going to take the whole freaking knuckle off. Like, it's not that bad. It's a lot of bolts to undo. But I've eliminated all my cone washers, so it's not that bad of a job for me to get into mine. If you have cone washers, it can be a pain in the ass. But, you know, once you get really good at cone washers, not that bad.
The trick of cone washers is mm-hmm. apply, like, axle grease. Or before, like, heavy, you know, wheel bearing grease
yep.
to them before you put them in place.
Yeah, I agree.
So then when it's time to get them out, they're not like rusted to the part that you're trying to, you know, get apart.
Yeah.
So, and that's an easy, quick solution. And then usually a few taps of the hammer around where the cone washers are, and then they'll usually pop loose.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Either that or get a brass drift.
Mm-hmm.
And hit the studs, the yeah. ends of the studs, and that'll knock them loose too. So yep. there's lots of little tricks to get out to cone washers. The main point is get eyes on your components, right?
Mm-hmm.
For your maintenance stuff. And don't do like me and just assume that it's good. So yeah, there's get yeah. eyes on stuff.
Maybe this is really jumping ahead, but you drove your truck until you blew up bearings in your T-case.
Yeah.
I thought I was hearing something in my T case and completely ripped it apart. Uh-huh. And there's nothing wrong.
Right? Two different ends of the spectrum.
I'm like, something's bad. I got to fix it.
Yeah. I'm just like.
Which is another reason I like wheeling without music.
Eh. That just takes away from the ambiance. Yeah,
probably would have saved me like $600 too.
Yeah. Right. Oh man. So yeah. Okay. So wheel bearings is a good one. Oil levels is a good one. What about like engine oil? Are you looking for anything in particular when you drain the engine oil? Is that going to tell you anything, or are you just like?
Well, I do know that there's people that send their oil out to companies,
mm-hmm.
And get reports on how the level is or how the oil is, and they can find very fine details like that's sulfur true. Levels and
mm-hmm.
stuff. I've never done that.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it'd be interesting though. I think it'd be fun
yeah.
to check out. I know that Ultra 4 Jones does it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some other people that have done it. I do know that, Sean Spaghetti
mm-hmm.
said that he was going to do it
uh-huh.
and then he was going to add Best Line to his engine.
Oh, and then do it again.
And then, yeah, for the next oil change, then uh-huh. he was going to send it out and see if there was a change in the readings.
That would be fascinating. Or worse. Yeah.
So I thought that would be interesting to hear the solution or the outcome of that mm-hmm. at some point. So you can use the oil, send it out. You send out a vial or something to a company and they give you reports. But as a quick view, I think you're just looking at like how dark the oil is. If there's metallics, visible metallics on, you know, in the oil when it's draining or on the plugs or the drain plug. Besides that, I can't really think of anything too much. One thing I want to try sometime, and I'm not sure if it's possible, is I want to do an oil change, drive my truck. Like, there's always carbon in there, so it's going to be black.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, a week later, change the oil again.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's black, change the oil again.
And keep doing it.
And see if I could eventually make it so that the oil is, like, clean again.
Huh.
It'd be a lot of money, but it'd be. I'd try it on the four banger before I try it on the
Clifford.
But it'd be interesting. It'd be a interesting test to see, like, okay, this truck has 150,000, 200,000 miles on it. Uh-huh. Every time you change the oil, it's black. How many oil changes 1 week apart do I have to do to turn this oil clean again?
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
And if it's even possible.
Yeah, I wonder if that would even be possible if you could use a solvent additive to your oil to help clean up the cylinders or clean up anything like that. Yeah.
I know those seafoams, man. Everybody talks about seafoam. And seafoam did, I mean, when I was playing with the engine on Samantha, I visibly saw and heard differences after I did seafoam.
I agree.
I put it in the intake. I put another style in their gas tank. I think I added some into the oil, you know, and then you change it all out and, you know, but it was, I remember that seafoam stuff doing something.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was necessarily good or bad, but it definitely changed everything around. But to answer your question, I think the only thing you can really tell is about how dark the engine oil is or if there's some metallics visibly while you're there. I think those are the only two things.
Okay. What about coolant levels? We touched a little bit on it, went over it quickly. I think that one's, again, also pretty streamlined.
Yeah, I think just look at the coolant, make sure that it's full, make sure that you have some in the reservoir tank. Besides that, you know, coolant's one of those things that I think is, while you're driving it around, it's either working or not working. Mm-hmm. Not much you can check unless you have a leak while it's stopped. I don't know. I can't think of too much with coolant. Do you know of anything else?
Not much else. The big thing with coolant is if you want to do a flush of your system, then you want to look and see if there's any rust particles showing up in the bucket that you drain your coolant into.
True. Good. Yep.
Yeah. And that'll tell you, you know, what's going on in your coolant water passageways in the engine block and whether or not they're getting rotted out or whether it's all good. If everything comes out super nice and clean, then you're good. If you're seeing, you know, a red tinge to anything, orange tinge, rust, pieces of rust dust in it, you've got something going on in your engine block and you might want to consider doing a full clean and flush as well to get rid of any of that.
And I know Bobcat does, cause I ran water for so long where coolant is actually an anti-rust as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was running coolant and now I know that there's sections that have rust in it.
Yeah.
Also another thing about coolant is if you are going to do a flush, make sure that you're matching coolants.
Yep.
Because if you mix versions of coolants, some of them can coagulate.
Yep.
And somewhat solidify.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really bad for trying to move things through your engine.
Yes, very bad.
So just make sure that you're matching the coolants that you have.
Yeah.
Or had in your vehicle.
Yeah, we've talked about that too. And that's why I use universal coolant on everything. Yeah. I don't go with HOAT or OAT. I just pick whatever the universal one that's option available. So so coolant's pretty straightforward. What about power steering fluid?
Yeah, I almost never change that.
Really?
Yeah. I don't I don't know if power steering fluid goes bad. As with brake fluid, I mean, I bleed my brakes. I check my brakes and I bleed my brakes occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I do the brakes, I have to add more fluid, but I almost never check my power steering fluid. Yeah. I don't know. I think that you need to look at your lines. I know that like my hydraulic lines, you know, you need to keep an eye on if they're cracking.
You've got a ram assist or full hydro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Check on those. I carry spare lines with me. Mm-hmm. Actually, I need to get another spare line because last year on Sierra Trek, somebody blew a line and I gave them a line.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, just keeping an eye on that one. But, I, you know, once again, I don't know if that fluid goes bad over time or not.
I don't think it necessarily goes bad, but what I think happens is if your fluid heats up a lot over and over and again, it can essentially damage the fluid. It doesn't work as well anymore through continuous high heat duty cycles. From what I've heard and from my experience, because I'm having issues with this right now, is that the fluid will get very dark colored from when you originally put it in, the more it heats up. And it's almost kind of like motor oil. Motor oil, you're getting more carbon into the oil and you're using up the lubricity of the oil kind of thing. And power steering fluid is a similar in theory, right? A similar outcome, I should say.
Yeah.
And color wise, at least it gets darker as it's heating up. So that's one way to tell if you have a specific power steering fluid you use and you know that it should be clear fluid and it's like a darker color now, you might want to look at swapping that out and flushing that system so that you get new fluid in there. And then maybe that is also an indicator that your power steering is getting hot.
Right.
And it might be worth it to start looking into putting in a cooler. A cooler
or a bigger reservoir or something.
One or the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about brake fluid and clutch fluid, maybe, if some people are running manuals?
Once again, I mean, those are two that I almost never touch. Mm-hmm. Like, I sort of talked about brake fluid. I mean, I usually go around and I bleed my brakes every year just to make sure that there's, you know, no air anywhere that there should be.
No blockages.
You know, and I look at the brake. When I take all the wheels off, I'm looking at the brakes. Mm-hmm. You know, I converted the rear of Bobcat into discs so I can easily look and see how the pads are. It's not drum anymore, which suck.
Yeah.
But the benefit of drums is they do take a really long time to wear down.
Yeah.
So they're not terrible on that aspect. Plus, they work pretty good when it's wet. So.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I would agree. I think clutch fluid, brake fluid, which is the same fluid, by the way, .3. So it's just make sure the levels are topped off, really. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot you can tell by those that I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
Cool. What about what's another maintenance topic and maintenance thing?
Well, I would check your windows. I mean, you don't want cracks. You know, I would highly suggest, especially during wheeling season, I mean, cracks and refractions of light that could happen while you're wheeling around or doing a hard obstacle could mess you up, and it wouldn't be that bad. Mm-hmm. Or it might be bad, but you know, it's not a horrible thing to have the crack window. But if you have a crack and it doesn't touch an edge, you know, it's not the worst thing, but as soon as your crack touches the edge, then the window becomes drastically more fragile. And, you know, you just don't want to be out somewhere where you're going to have problems with a window. And if you have AAA, I believe that AAA has like a window replacement program built into it where it's like $100 and you get a replacement window or something.
Yeah. $100 deductible or something.
Yeah. And they pay for the change of your window.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would look into those. You know, especially if you're in the down maintenance season and you have time to have a window changed.
Yep.
That's not bad. I kind of only have sort of one other thing that I can think about. Do you have anything else?
I have a few others. The big ones for me next would be suspension bolts.
Hardware was going to be mine.
Yeah. Hardware bolts. Just a good thorough nut and bolt check and paint penning.
Yeah. That's a good suggestion. I just bought some paint pens. And they're I wish I could remember the name of them. They're not paint. They're like paint in these little containers that have this like
a little dabber on it.
No, it's like a super fine. It's like
eyedroppers.
Yeah, they're kind of like big eyedroppers in a way. Okay. You know, I was gonna say super glue. You know, like super glue has that long nose to it.
Yeah.
And so, but the nose is like metal, and so So it's a very fine line, easy to add on. And I bought pink and I bought a yellow. I was going to add yellow onto Bobcat and I was going to do pink onto Samantha.
Nice. Yeah, it's smart. I've had paint pens for, God, probably 3 years. I still haven't used them. And I always keep sitting there. I'm like, I need to paint pen all my stuff. I need to paint pen all my stuff. I never do. And this is another one of those, like, I really wish I did, and I just need to stop being dumb and do it. Mm-hmm. But paint penning is great because it gives you a very quick, easy, and noticeable indicator that something is wrong with your hardware.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. So it takes a little bit of time, but it can save a big headache later on by paint penning all your hardware.
Right. Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's almost no limit to checking hardware. I mean, you can go, I would, to some extent, I would check every single nut and bolt, you know, like just do it, you know?
Yeah.
There's times when I'm checking my drive shaft bolts. There's times when I'm checking my leaf springs. There's times when I'm checking the U-bolts on the axles. There's times when I'm checking the hubs. There's times when I check my six shooter knuckles, the steering knuckles, you know, there's, you know, there's times when I look up at my cross member and I look at those bolts and, you know, just put a wrench on it and see if it's loose.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many, so much, it's on our rigs, there's so much torque that happens. But on off-roading, there's, you know, times when you're bouncing off of rocks or you're coming down on a rock or there's, you know, rocks are hitting things or you're, you know, coming off of a rock and landing and your suspension's compressing. You know, all these things can make a bolt loose, break. And actually, you know what? I when I was redoing my leaf springs, I put it in new bushings. I also bought new center pins. And both of my center pins were bent.
Really? Interesting.
And so it's just, you know, like if you're doing one maintenance, you might as well do all the maintenance. You know, it's like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people go, oh, my center spin's still there. It's still connected. It's still, you know, fine. But then when you actually take it apart and you look at it and you go, oh.
You find that your two center leaves are broken.
That or I find that my center pin's broken and it probably was in the near semi-future that my center pin would have broken.
Yeah, that's very true.
So.
Yeah, that's another good one. I didn't even think of center pins, but that's a good one. They're so, I mean, if you think about it, your U-bolts on leaf springs, right? We're talking about leaf spring rear vehicles right now. Your U-bolts take, you know, a bit of the stress of the leaf springs and locating the axle underneath your vehicle, but most of the stress of an axle being located under your vehicle is put on the leaf, on the, that center pin.
The center pin and the U-bolts.
The center pin and the U-bolts. And it's like, that's so much
all,
for this.
Yeah, all, a lot of that twisting motion all kind of gets put on that center pin. But then the your U-bolts and the whatever
the
you want.
The arch of the spring and the...
the whatever the cap, the thing that holds the springs down.
Yeah,
the, I know what you the U-bolts are connect to. The spring plate, I don't...
The plate, yeah. The spring.
I mean, a lot U-bolt of stress. Plate. U-bolt That's plate. All that. A lot of stress is put on there too, so...
Yeah, but I mean, that, it's like... That just holds the... it sandwiches the leaf spring, right? And to the axle.
Yeah, but
that
you don't,
U-bolt plate.
Yes.
And so it's being held there by friction more than a piece of hardware. Well, whereas the stress of really holding it there, I mean, the friction helps a hell of a lot.
Yeah. But it's also, I mean, there's the twisting motion of it that it, you know, the U-bolts are helping to hold that down to your axle. Yeah. Where the center pin is helping to hold the springs together.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true.
But then the plate also is helping to hold the springs together to some extent because it's being forced. Like we drove out of Moab with that, the spring across the way from me here that doesn't have a center pin in it.
No, it does not.
And granted, we drove very gingerly out, but we were able to drive out without a center pin.
Yep.
Center pin is just more, I don't know. I'd almost go as far to say that the center pin actually has less stress on it and than the U-bolt plate does. But the center pin helps hold the location of the leaf springs on the, like in the axle, on the axle.
Yeah. Because I mean, we, when we did that and we put the broken leaf spring pack, the rewelded one, under Bobcat with no center pin, the axle did not stay centered. It didn't stay located and it didn't take much to pull it out.
No, it did not.
And so I'm kind of like, man, I think that there's more stress on the center pin than there is on the U-bolts. I don't know. So anyways, check the hardware. A hardware check is the biggest one, I think. It's way too easy. I think the one of the first times I really heard it and it stuck in my head a lot was Ultra 4 Jones said it. Once where you give a nut or a bolt a tiny, any degree of rotation, and that just becomes a bigger and bigger and bigger lever to leverage that hardware off. So that's the big benefit of paint pens. You can tell right away if anything has moved at all. So there's that. I'm also a big fan of defogging, putting defogger on my windshields.
Oh, like a Rain-X or
something? Like a Rain-X on the exterior and defogger on the interior twice a year at minimum. Just because you never know, you might wake up early in the morning or you might be out on a summer trip on the Rubicon and all of a sudden end up in a storm on your way up Cadillac. Like, you just never know up in high elevations, up in the mountainous areas where a lot of us go off-roading at, when the weather is going to turn on you.
Absolutely.
And so just being prepared to make sure that you can still see out of your windshield no matter what's going on. That's one thing I do twice a year. So I do that more than I check my transmission oil, apparently.
Right. I think another one to kind of take, I mean, for the most part, any moving part you should try to put your eyes on.
Yeah. Right?
And another moving part that we've kind of glanced over is your steering system.
Yeah.
Look at your Heim joints or look at your ball joints and, you know, or rod ends or whatever, you know, could make sure that your, you know, pitman arm is looking good and all the connection points are fine and, you know, none of them are rusted or broken or the, you know, you could re-grease them at that point. I have a weird slip issue on Bobcat in my between my steering wheel and my power steering box. Your steering column is made to collapse and mine moves up automatically and almost disconnects itself sometimes.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. And so every time I go, before I go wheeling, I make sure I reach in there and just yank it down and make sure that it's where it needs to be. But it's just so, and those are things that, like, when you're doing your maintenance, you know what's going on with your rig. And like, I don't have problems with it because I know that I just need to, oh, maybe while I'm out wheeling on a multi-day trip, I just need to check that and make sure that's still where it needs to be.
Interesting. Okay. That's another really good one. Another good one that I just thought about that I used to do a lot with my first gen 4Runner because I had a blown head gasket and never knew, but I could never figure out what was going on. Check your spark plugs.
Oh.
So just pull the spark plugs really quick. Looking at a spark plug can tell you a lot of what's going on inside your cylinders.
Absolutely.
So
if they're wet, if they're oily, if they have a ton of carbon on them.
Yeah. If it's not firing at all, you got no burn. There's a lot you can tell from spark plugs, which is pretty cool. It'll tell you a nice, good story about your engine. So pull your spark plugs during maintenance too. It's something that takes very little effort to do typically. and can tell you a lot about what's going on with an engine. So that's another one. That's a good one. That's about, like, I'm sure there's more stuff. Like,
absolutely more stuff.
Yeah.
I think this was more of just a general overview. Like, hey, here's some going from winter into summer wheeling.
From winter wheeling season into summer rock crawling.
Yeah. What are some things that you should look at and consider doing?
Yeah. I think that's the big one. The big one for me when you're going from winter wheeling season to summer is that the water intrusion. Absolutely. Where can water get in? And what do you need to look at to see if water did get in? Because a lot of our vehicles are made out of steel and metal, which doesn't do well with water typically over long periods of time. So,
I think that's a great way to put it. The fact that going from winter season to summer season, you need to concern yourself with getting ready to wheel with no longer having the water around. So did water get into your vehicle? Did it go anywhere? You need to clean your vehicle out and make sure that no water got in there. Right. And then in a way, going from summer into winter, you need to go through and say, well, you just probably put a ton of stresses and a lot of, you know, wear and tear on your vehicle before you go into winter season. What now do you need to look at, you know, to get ready for the wet season? You know, did you bang up your rig and bang up your door and now water's going to be able to get in?
A lot of seals and gaskets as you're going from summer into winter wheeling season. It's interesting. You just kind of think of what are your things. And if you live in Arizona, the best thing you can do to get ready for summer rock crawling is get rock lights. Make sure your rock lights work.
That's actually a great point.
I was just making a joke, but
no, I mean, they wheel at night.
Yeah,
they don't wheel during the day because it's too freaking hot.
Yeah.
I mean, they go out when it's like 85, 90 degrees at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in any regards, you know, just doing some of those, like, do my headlights work? Do my blinkers work? Do the brakes lights work? Do the reverse lights work? Does my e-brake still work? Does, you know, any of these bare necessities, if you're a street legal rig,
yeah,
you know, I think that some of those things, you know, you need to always be paying attention to.
Yeah, I agree.
I say that and I don't have any reverse lights.
I was just about to say, in studio audience only, how many people has all your lights and e-brakes working?
Yeah. Zero.
Zero.
Yeah. I told the guys at Cruise Moab I would have an e-brake next year.
We got to get, I'm telling you, man, those Wilwood electronic e-brake calipers.
Yeah.
Those look sexy. I'm so excited for them.
Why don't we sponsor or partner with Wilwood?
I would love to. Wilwood.
Yeah.
Call me.
Yeah. 916-345-4744.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, there's so much maintenance you can do on a vehicle, and really doing the maintenance, A, helps your vehicle last longer, but it gives you more confidence on the trail. It gives you, and it tells you a lot of what's going on with your vehicle. So if you can learn to do good maintenance, you can learn to work on your vehicle and keep it alive beautifully.
Yeah, too. I think that's a valid point. You know, mm-hmm. if you don't know your rig, if you just like bought a Jeep, you know, a brand new JL right off the market, mm-hmm. you know, showroom floor, and you wheeled it all winter, mm-hmm. and you've never touched the thing,
Rodney,
general maintenance
uh-huh.
is the gateway drug to that.
It totally is.
Right? Because once you start, you know, like you start changing brakes, you start changing some basic fluids, you know, probably at that point you already have, like you can take it back to the dealer and get its oil change for free. But, you know, but I think that starting to learn the maintenance of your rig helps you eventually start learning how to fix your rig if you have a problem, mm-hmm. which eventually is going to lead to being able to almost problem solve anything with any rig out on the trail. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I agree, man. I think that does it. I want to go wheeling now. I want to go wheeling. I want to go rock crawling. I want to go hang out with my friends out on the trails without being the huge liability.
That's how I always feel.
Oh, that's funny. Well, cool. If anybody has any feedback that you want to give, if you have some maintenance stuff that you really like doing, that is, you know, maybe we didn't mention it, or maybe it's just for a different type of vehicle. Like maybe Unimogs have a different maintenance type of thing
because they got to change the portal
gears. Yeah.
There's got to be oil in there, right?
I'm sure there's grease at least.
Maybe. I would assume there's something.
There's got to be something in there.
But, Ron, let us know.
Ron or Joe or Austin or all of our Unimog buddies.
I saw on Facebook Marketplace, I saw a camper just like Ron Tuttle's.
Really?
Yeah, that kind that it was called an Alaskan camper, but it was the kind, it's a hard shell that lifts up.
That would be cool.
I was like, ooh,
yeah,
that's rad. I also saw a Wilderness camper, which is a, it's a like camper shell that has the top of it pop up to the side and then a tent rises from it.
Okay.
And it was a very good price out in Kansas. So Tyson, I might need you to go pick up a camper shell for me.
Yeah.
Nice. And ship it.
Ship it over here for us.
Or drive it.
Yeah.
And then let's go on the Rubicon.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah. Have him come down for the listeners run.
Yeah. Or just fly it out on the Wheeling Wine and Whiskey's private jet.
Yeah, there you go. They won't mind. They're paying for all the gas right now too. So anyway, so
they've got bills to catch up on. So we'll just write it off.
We're going to keep using the jet until you guys pay your bills. Well, cool, man. Get in contact with us. You guys know how to do that. It's been 308 episodes now of getting in contact and interacting with Jimmy and I, and we love every second of it. So that's all I got, man. Jimmy, do you have any final words for everybody?
E-spec torque wrench.
Oh, and with that, my friends, keep torquing.
I got one for you.
Ready.
Where do cats go swimming?
In the kiddie pool.
Yay. Nice job.
I win.